Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You've been to CMPX, no?
This is my first time, yeah.
I'm surprised how many of you guys this is the first time. Like, but you know about the show.
I know about the show, yeah. It's every 2 years.
It's every 2 years, but I guess it's just you guys are too busy. You're on the job site, so it's just, you don't have the time to go there.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
That's for sure. You know, having the time, it's hard even for me as an owner to come out, you know?
It's a big deal because now you got to basically shut things down or leave certain crew, certain sites and stuff like that. But welcome to the show. We're in the doll booth here.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful that they invited us to come in and we just set this up. And then I wanted to get you on the mic on a longer show than you guys were just answering a few questions on the 500 event, which is good. So we got to meet everybody. That was planting the seed. That's all it was. We were just getting started. So if you want to share your deets, you know, the IG handle, the website and everything like that, so everyone knows about it. And
then, okay. Yeah. So our company, it's Romeo Mechanical. The Instagram is Romeo Mechanical, right?
It's
pretty straightforward.
And then the email to get a hold of you?
It's for me directly, mark@romeomechanical.com, but usually it's info. That's
info at Romeo Mechanical, right?
Yeah, info at Romeo Mechanical.
.com there.
.com, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so. And then, you focus mostly on the mechanical side.
You know what? I would say 80% of our business is plumbing. 20% is the hydronics and the gas. So we're not full mechanical yet.
Okay.
But it's mostly a plumbing outfit.
Custom or are you going commercial?
We've been doing custom in the beginning, but then I found commercials where we want to stay. We've been doing only commercial now.
There's good money in commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Commercial. Once you get paid.
No, we have good relationships.
Good.
So when we first started, it was whatever you can get, residential.
Of course.
The hydronic side is mostly residential.
How many people on the crew?
Like we have 8 guys right now.
Oh, he's got a healthy crew.
Yeah. It's been 3 years of business, so it's been steady growth.
What's the the age range going on here, like from yourself to everybody else?
I'm 34.
So who's the youngest now in the crew?
We have a 19-year-old.
Got a kid.
Yeah.
And who's the oldest?
He's 35.
So just a year older than you.
Yeah, we're all young guys.
So it's basically a young crew, right?
Young crew guys. They're very much into the trade. They want to learn.
Is that an advantage or disadvantage coming to plumbing?
I think it's been an advantage because these younger guys are motivated. And I think they want to learn more. And I've kind of been trying to attract people like that in our business that want to learn and grow and do it right and once.
Stay for a while and build this as a legacy kind of thing, right?
Yeah. I don't believe in the whole go, 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 just get it done. And it's, you know, the quality's not there. So
no.
I told them it's okay. You don't know enough right now. I'll teach you the right way. This is the way you should do it. Even if it takes a little longer, just do it once at least, right? Don't do it twice.
What's your path been like? Where'd you get started? Like, what was the first one? How old were you when you guys started?
I started late. I was 24.
What were you doing before then? Just Joe Jobs?
No, I was a concrete guy.
Oh, you're doing concrete?
Yeah.
So, wait, I know somebody else that went from concrete to plumbing.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
My father works for, he's retired. He worked for Metro Concrete Floors.
Okay.
So he does commercial.
Super, loads of concrete.
Yeah, super flat floors where they would test it. So I worked for them. My dad kicked me out. He said, too tall for concrete.
You are too tall for pushing a wheelbarrow, man.
Yeah,
no, it's way too tall for
it. Too tall, and I got into the trade. I have a cousin that owns a business.
Okay.
So I got into the business there and eventually went on my own. But we do concrete, though. I mean, if you see my Instagram, we do...
Yeah, you'll chop it up and then run the drains and then you'll pour it in.
Yeah. So we've gotten gobs of contractors wanting to go with us because we take away that stress off your hands, right?
It's kind of nice, actually, if I think about it. Because every time I've always hired sub, I had to go back in and get all the bags and mix the concrete and pour it in there. And even though it's an easy pour, it's harder work to carry everything down there to get it done.
Exactly.
You guys take care of it.
Yeah.
That's a nice little niche. That makes sense.
So we kind of grew with that. We do a lot of Starbucks, Pet Value stores, various restaurants. We'll come in, scan, cut, remove, patch.
I just saw, was it today's post or yesterday's post? You had the Was it the drain at an ice cream place?
Yeah, Kawartha's in Burlington.
Yeah, so what was that all about? So that's just the drain, I guess the condensation drain from the freezers or?
Oh, that video. Okay, that was the ice cream.
Yeah, the
stations.
Ice cream. Yeah.
So what they have is this running water in a tray where they put the scoop.
Yes.
That's what that is all about.
Yeah.
So that was just.
So the water's got to go somewhere. Right. You have a reservoir and then it goes through a drain, food drain, drain pipes.
Yeah.
And then I think there was three of them?
There's three of them, yeah.
Yeah, so. And I was like, now I'm going to go to an ice cream shop and I'm going to look at it differently. I'm going to be like, hey, there's a drain back there. Yeah. I know there is. There's something going on there.
I like to try to capture those interesting things, and you get to see that a lot in commercial.
Yeah.
Where in residential, it's good, but you don't see everything in the mechanical world. That's why I like commercial, industrial. But I wanted to show that because, you know, you don't see it behind the counter.
Nobody's ever seen that, right? Yeah, but also you guys are dealing with, I guess, grease traps.
Yeah,
grease traps. Like that's where you deal with it when it's brand new, I guess, right?
Yeah. We don't do a lot of service.
Yeah.
I'm starting to try to get into it more because there's a demand, you know.
Of course.
They ask us to do service because once you're your plumber, they're going to ask you to do the service calls, right? They're not going to get another guy, so...
But I'm not too familiar with the whole commercial side of things regarding plumbing in general. Like, I saw the way that was set up with the ice cream, but that's all code, right? So there's no P-trap for that, but there's a P-trap at the end of the line of all of them, right? Is that the idea?
So actually, there's a funnel floor. There's a funnel drain.
Yeah.
And that pipe doesn't actually go in the funnel. There's an air gap.
Okay.
In case that sewer backs up, they don't want it to cross-contaminate.
Got it.
So it literally, there's no P-trap needed because it's not connected to sewer. It's just a direct, indirect drain.
Yeah. Right?
So you only need a P-trap if it's directly connected to the sewer because you get that sewer gas. So a lot in the restaurant industry is what we do a lot of our plumbing. Even the vegetable sink. It's not connected directly.
Yeah.
See, it just dumps in a hub drain, right?
It's just, different ways of things that they're, they did it that way to make it easier, I guess.
No, sir. It's a safety thing, right? For health. For you got a sink that you put all your vegetables in. They don't want any cross-contaminated.
Okay, I got it. Right.
Yeah. Depending on what industry you're in, there's different rules. You know, we're getting into the medical industry now. We're doing a lot of dentist offices.
That's a whole other world. Now you guys are using what is that? That drain, that PEX. It's a different kind of. It's that gray PEX, right? It's a health. No, it's a. I can't remember the name of it. You guys know it.
So, I mean...
bio drainer. I don't know what the hell it's called. Something.
In the dentist world, it's usually airlines, which we use copper or PEX. Suction lines, which is the gray System 15 pipe.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay. And then we use just regular plumbing pipes, right? So you got different things you got to deal with. You got to deal with domestic water, drainage, suction, airlines... Now we're going to get into medical gas.
See, so it's not like your truck's full of ABS.
No.
A little bit of PVC.
Yeah.
And then PEX or copper.
Yeah.
You guys have like a whole range of stuff that you guys are using depending on the job.
Depending on the job, yeah. So some guys like to focus on a certain niche. Right now we're just trying to grow and take on everything. And so, we end up having tons of material. But
now you're focusing on?
I'm focusing on... Not doing the housing anymore.
No.
We did 9 townhouses in Georgetown last year. We did like maybe 6 custom homes. And be honest, I also caught wind that it was going to slow down. Like I kind of talked to people.
You ain't the only one. I hope people are listening. They're like, listen, it's going to slow down.
Yeah.
Period.
So, I mean, making the switch last year, I think was smart.
Yeah.
I'm still worried about commercial as well. I mean, it could be affected too. So I think service is the safest bet. So doing a little bit of both is nice.
It's true.
I don't like to. I'm too early on to pick one thing. So try to take on.
Plus, you got to factor in like how you want to prepare yourself for when it does, if it does. How's that's going to react to your guys, right?
Oh yeah.
It's because the worst thing you want to do is you're growing a business and you want to let guys go because you can't. You're not growing the business anymore. You're just surviving, right?
So it's been 3 years. We haven't been slow. So. I've gotten good advice early on, the way to operate. I don't know if it's healthy, if it works for everybody. It's been working for me. So I have 2 guys, or I have 1 guy. Let's get to 110% work. Okay, now it justifies the growth of adding another guy. So now I have 2 guys. Let's push it to 110
makes
so sense. I can get another guy.
Yeah.
You're always uncomfortable. you're always putting yourself pressure on yourself. That's the only way you grow. Pressure creates growth.
Yeah.
If I just sit back and you know what, get enough work for eight guys, it can go down, and then you're laying off a guy.
Yeah.
So I've been constantly trying to add more work and more work. Eight guys, let's find work for nine guys. Let's find work for 10 guys.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense.
There's no sitting back and relaxing. It's either you go up or you go down.
And so, the guys are all aware of this. You're letting them know that this is happening, that this is... So our week is like this, next week's like that, next month's like this.
Yeah.
So they get a sense of it. So then we don't get those spells where everything starts to drop down.
Yeah. I mean, I could kind of see a spell coming 2 months before.
Okay.
So I start scrambling, right? I'll start getting more work. And, you know, you don't tap into all your resources sometimes.
You're focusing strictly on the sales part of it? You're not on the tools anymore?
No, I'm not on the tools anymore.
Okay, good.
I'm quoting, managing. I do go on the tools here and there for little things. I call it putting out fires. You know, I got a crew out in Midland right now, and there's a service call in Hamilton. I'll go, right? I'm not going to take those guys. By the time they go there...
Or hold this pipe here.
Yeah.
So then I can get that joint set up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're probably reaching 8 feet, no problem, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm 6'6", 7 foot wingspan. So anybody that plays basketball.
They get it.
Invite me. I'll be a good center.
They'll get it, right? Yeah. But it's good that you're doing that. So now you can focus on the pencil and then build the relationships and start expanding and trying to figure out where the company's going to go and keep on growing. And then keeping the crew in mind, letting them know this is where we're headed.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then they get hungry as well, because obviously they're going to contribute too, right?
I tell my guys, if you're with a company that's not growing, you should leave.
If you see the company just surviving.
Yeah, then the guy's just worried about making his cut.
His side, yeah.
Right? You want to be with a dynamic company that's growing, that wants to grow, because then you'll grow with them.
Yeah.
You piggyback off their success. So my vision, I've worked on a construction site with 150 plumbers on one site. Yeah, it was a Sanofi job, pharmaceutical.
150 plumbers.
Yeah, but between the base building plumbers, which was Kelson, I think, was there, and the stainless steel guys, which was another 70 or something, it was 120 guys.
I don't think I want to be in the epicenter of 100 and that many plumbers, man.
That was a big job.
That's intimidating.
Trailers full of guys.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard of those stories. I've heard of the stories about electricians as well. It was trailers of crews.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've seen how big of a scale things can get. You know, it was a point where we didn't have any drawings. It was all iPads. Like, there was 26 systems. You couldn't print out enough paper. So every crew, they always had two guys and an iPad, and everybody had walkie-talkies, and everybody had their own. Every crew had their own job box and tools and everything. It was insane.
You're not intimidated?
No, it's nice to see
organization like that.
It's nice to see. I mean, the job has to make sense for you. You know, all the shots that we had in the ceiling, they were done by GPS, and they were done and put in before. They were tracked through GPS. The sleeves were tracked through GPS. I can go on about this job. It was insane. So
it was done. It was set up correctly. You guys couldn't fail.
It was prefab pieces. So you had to hang them at the elevation they said, with the slope they said. And then they brought a scanner, and it would scan the room to confirm that it was in the right spot.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a Tremble software that's insane.
We should bring that into Resi.
No,
it would never happen, man. It would never happen.
You don't have the budget.
You failed.
Yeah. Resi, the drawings are not as great.
Yeah.
The crew has to work together. Electrician, plumbers, where are you going? Where I'm going?
Where
these, they uploaded all the plumbing and electrical and HVAC through the software, and they saw the interferences months before they even start, and they adjust.
Well, back in the day, that drawings were drawings.
Yeah.
Right? Not like residential drawings nowadays, man.
Yeah.
They're missing sections of it.
Yeah. No.
And then they leave it up to you guys to figure it out.
Yeah.
But, no, that's a good job to go. How long was that job for?
It was 2 years.
2 years, eh?
Yeah, it was a 3-story building. It was $1 billion to build. LS Don. And I remember Doug Ford was there. He cut the ribbon.
Of course he was there.
Yeah.
Anywhere there's a big wad of money, he's there.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
Yeah, that was a big job. That was in 20...
But you learned a lot, probably.
I learned how to lay out really well.
Okay.
Because you had to lay it out on the floor and use a line laser to see which ones are your shots. Yeah, you had to. So they gave you the columns.
I get it.
Your so spool, spool A1, and then you lay it on the floor. It's like an L shape, and then you would see where your shots are. Create your hangers, set them at the elevation, hang your pipe, and then they would come and scan it and see. Within an inch, they would complain.
That's the way every job should be done.
Yeah, I know.
Like, that's just precision, man.
It's a pharmaceutical job. There's money galore there.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, but what if we did homes like that? Or what if we did all structures like that? I get it.
For sure.
Plus, also, I'm looking at it, like, down the road, the servicing. It's probably easy peasy, the servicing. You're going in there, nothing's in the way. Everything's already laid out properly. Access here, access there. It's actually proper.
Yeah, it was intense, that job. I mean, technology in construction is going to help, I think, benefit us.
Of course.
In the long run. So the more you can utilize it, I think the better, right? So, I mean, already the tools coming out are amazing.
They're insane. They're helping you guys out. They're making your lives, your bodies last longer.
Yeah.
So you could work longer if you wanted to. But ideally, I think you want to work hard in your 30s. And then towards the end of your 40s, start looking at getting off the tools and just focusing on being a manager kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to go. I don't personally like seeing older tradespeople in their 60s and older still doing physical labor.
Yeah, it's hard.
And we don't know exactly what the stories are, if they have to because they don't have the money to retire or what have you, but it's hard to see that because it's not really... I get that there's some tough Europeans out there, tough Eastern Europeans out there, tough all kinds of people, but at a certain age, you got to have a little bit, you know, like it's not really for you.
Yeah.
Right? So it's challenging to see that sometimes. But we're left with that gap. You got too many young coming in and... Not enough, I guess I should say. Not enough young coming in. You got too many old going out.
Yeah. And we're feeling it in the plumbing industry. But they're really feeling it in the concrete and the bricklaying.
Nobody wants to do that job.
I know. It's hard. And those are really back-breaking jobs.
Yeah.
Like my, you know, I've done it. I know the concrete stuff. But, you know, that's why I like taking it on. Because I've done it before. No big deal. But it is harder on my guys.
You guys are probably the only ones that I know of that will take care of the concrete after the fact. Unless others are jumping on.
I think they do it,
okay.
But they sub it out. Where we do it in-house.
Yeah, you do it. Okay.
So
our
prices are lower, right? Because you're not subbing it out. You don't have that markup. So I was able to capture a lot of work like that. Smart. And my dad is retired. He would come and finish it.
It's a smart move, man.
Yeah.
What are you using? I guess you're using the Milwaukee Electric in there to cut it.
Okay, so the cutting is the only thing we do sub out.
Okay, so you'll get someone else.
I mean,
to cut
I can't afford $30,000 for those saws, and they got to be electric. And
I know.
Yeah,
that's why I was saying.
So we use ScanCore, which is a great guy, good relationship.
Okay.
So ScanCore comes, scans, cuts, remove. We excavate, plumb it, and then we patch it. Which the concrete patching costs more than the cutting.
Wouldn't it be nice if one day in the industry you could actually cut it, take it out as a block, do the work you need to put it. Come up with some adhesive and just put that exact same block right back in. Wouldn't that be kind of nice? How you?
Yeah.
I don't think you could ever do that. It would save waste in the landfill. It also saved the opportunity of making concrete, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
The thing is, when they cut it in the size that you can lift it.
To lift it.
So there's a lot of cuts.
Yeah. So now you got a puzzle to put it back in there. And plus, I guess it's not structurally sound unless, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of, because you're right. Technology is improving the industry.
Yeah.
Before it wasn't really doing that. It was just always more of a novelty. But now it's like you guys are building businesses around technology advancements in the actual trade and the industry.
Yeah.
Which is really good to see.
Yeah. I think going forward, the trades are going to be amazing to work in.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be. Well, you already see how it was, you know, 40 years ago, what they had to do with lead pipes. Now it's just like crimp. You don't even have to solder. Just crimp. Gas, I think by 2026, I was just talking to the guy at Viega, 2026, we can pro-press or mega-press up to 2.5, 3-inch, 4-inch, which you need a welder.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's going to take away the welding trade, unfortunately. But
threading's going to be gone. Welding's going to be gone.
Yeah. We're getting into these airlines now where you don't have to thread the pipe. They sell it's like a compression. So you save a third of the time of install. It costs more, but you're saving a third of the cost of install.
But even flexible gas lines like Warflex and stuff like that, it's just like, that was just a complete game changer when Eaglet got introduced.
Yeah. And commercial, you can't use too much of it. You can use 6 feet of it.
It's all got to be a hard pipe?
It's got to be hard pipe up to 6 feet. You can use it. Okay. You know, some engineers, I learned the hard way with some Smith and Anderson. They nailed us on one job because I thought you can just run the flex, 20 feet in the ceiling.
What's the thought process on why you can't use it everywhere? It's just too dangerous of a risk that someone could pinch it or damage it?
I don't know exactly. I mean, gas is a weird thing because there's not an inspector. Like, we have plumbing inspectors that come out.
Gas is TSSA, right?
It's TSSA, but they don't come out to pass the job, every job,
no,
right?
They don't.
They'll do their audits.
Yes.
But when you're using a flex pipe like that in commercial long runs, it's in housing, it's okay. But in commercial, they want it to be.
I can only assume, yeah, because then
I don't know if it's to do with because it's in the plenum, and it needs to be non-combustible. It might be that.
I don't know.
Maybe that. What
different
is,
set of rules.
Commercial, I gotta double check the code book.
Different side, yeah, all kinds of stuff like that. But it's interesting that. Oh look, it's group photo time now.
Yeah. There you go.
What are you expecting? Like what? So Vieira, what else? I noticed that Rigid had the thread machine still going on there.
Yeah, Milwaukee has a threading machine, electric.
Yeah, which is I keep on saying I have no idea why DeWalt's here. It makes no sense.
Yeah,
TNPX, I don't understand, but because all you guys are all red, it's just a fact.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Like I don't know. I don't know a mechanical or a plumber that's not red.
Yeah, Milwaukee has more plumbing.
It just makes sense, man.
Yeah,
it totally makes sense.
But I was looking at their Milwaukee has a lot of those big batteries.
Oh, the bricks.
Yeah, I was just thinking if it makes sense for our business because we're looking, I don't know. I have a threading machine, Rigid, plug it in, you're good to go. But those, I'm always scared of losing batteries. They're so expensive, the small ones.
Losing or having batteries stolen.
Yeah, so now you have those big batteries. Imagine, guy drops it in the, puddle or somebody takes it or something. I don't know how it is, but.
There's also a risk. I remember speaking to one of the manufacturers and they were telling me that there's a limitation on how big they can make these batteries because sometimes if they drop from a certain height, they can create an explosion.
Oh, wow.
Right? Okay. So it's like, that's why you won't see these massive batteries. They'll put some restrictions on these batteries that can't be put onto like impact guns or smaller hand tools.
Okay.
Because those are always dropping.
Oh, for sure.
And if you drop that with the battery, then there's something can happen to that battery and you can get some sort of charge and now you get a fire, you get an explosion.
Oh,
and I'm like, yeah, I get it because you got these cells in there and then you've got this agitation happening from the drop, right? So got to be a little careful around that. I don't know what Milwaukee's stance is on that because their batteries are getting bigger and bigger.
Oh, they're huge, yeah. I mean, I think if the job requires it, you need a battery because no power on site. But, I mean, how do you charge them? I don't know.
How do you charge them? How do you dispose them? How do you replace them when they do get done? Because batteries do die eventually.
Yeah.
Not when I say die, they just don't recharge as much as they've been charging all the time.
Yeah.
So it's like batteries are everywhere, right? It's great. Helps you guys. No power. You don't need it.
Yeah.
You don't need the cords. You don't need any of that stuff. But it's like, what are we going to do 10 years from now when you got, not even 10 years, less than 5 years.
Yeah.
You got to get rid of these batteries.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it, I don't know. I don't think we're going to go with it.
You know what's going to happen, Mark? You're going to get, the guy, I swear he's already disappeared. The metal sharpening guy.
Yeah.
The guy that drives around town.
Yeah.
You hear the ding, the bell, right? Like, that guy is going to disappear one day. I think he's just going to turn into, a battery collection guy. And he's going to be that sound's going to come to battery collection now.
Yeah.
And then he'll take care of those batteries. What he does with it, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But that's what I could see it happening, right?
Yeah.
Him and the food truck guy, the catering truck guy on the commercial job sites. Those guys are going to disappear too, man.
It's interesting. As industries are no longer needed, new industries come in and there's new jobs. New jobs come up, right? New things to do, right? So.
But it's interesting that food truck guy, he's still there.
Yeah.
But it's like very rare. But he was never really replaced by Uber. You know what I mean? Like you thought Uber would.
Construction site maybe.
That's what it is. I think it's like the construction site didn't really embrace the Uber as much as they embraced that guy. Because I think the value in that guy was having that conversation with that guy.
Yeah.
Like just getting to know who he is, saying hello, what's up, how's your day? Yeah. Give me a burnt veal sandwich. I get it. I love it. I'll eat it. But like you don't get that from a Uber thing. And no. I think that's where the connection is in construction, tradesperson, and that guy.
Yeah. I like those coffee trucks you can walk in.
Yeah.
You seen those ones?
Yeah,
those
I've seen those. Nice. Yeah. So you can make your... Yeah, no, I totally like that kind of stuff, right? Those are like
more expensive, but, you know, they're nice.
But it's nice. It's a nice little touch, but it's the interaction with that person that's driving that thing versus the Uber is like this invisible person who leaves a paper bag there for you and you go away from it.
Yeah,
it doesn't work.
When you order Uber, you barely talk to the guy. You probably don't even see him. He just leaves it at the door.
You just leave it at the door.
Yeah, I know.
It's such a disconnect. There's never going to be, don't worry, there's never going to be an Uber construction. It's not going to be like...
No, make sure it doesn't happen.
A lot of guys are talking about technology taking over construction and it's like modular this and modular that and robots doing this. And I'm like, to an extent, you might get robots demolishing, right? Like you might get automated cranes moving certain things. Like you're talking about that GPS stuff. You might get cranes that are just on a pattern and it's just moving concrete, but it probably has to be a pinpoint pattern, right?
Yeah.
You might get to that, but you're still going to need that tradesperson on the ground, each floor working. They're not going to get replaced by a robot.
No. I think technology will help more with prefabbing stuff.
Yeah.
Right, where it'll help you can do it and working at your shop and shipping. And I've seen guys prefab a whole washroom on a. They'll have a bunch of carriers.
Yeah.
And all plumbed and vented and everything, and they roll it in, drop it in, and then they just bolt it down and then connect the plumbing to it. I mean, there's big companies that do that. I see that in big commercial.
They're doing that here?
Oh, they've been doing that for a few years.
For a while now.
Yeah,
right?
Like they'll put all the carriers, you know, in commercial you get these carriers.
Yeah.
So instead of one carrier at a time doing it on site, you measure on site, prefab it, drop it all, build it all in strut, drop it in. That's it. It's already done. You control your... The thing in construction that bothers me, you don't control your environment. You're stuck on a job site.
You adapt. You adapt to your environment.
If you're in the manufacturing industry, right? It's your shop. Yeah. You have your guys there. You can control the environment.
Yeah.
Construction, it's hard to control the environment, right? So I think the prefabbing it, you can do it at the shop. It's efficient. And you can bring it on site. You try to install this, electricians on a ladder is in your way, or, you know, the guy's spray foaming. You know, that's the part, that's the biggest struggle I find with the job sites. You don't have control of it. You don't know who's going to be in your way that day. Or
is it a mixed bag on the commercial side? It's like every trade's there? Pretty
sometimes
much,
sometimes,
right?
It's just everybody get, there's deadlines.
Yeah.
So you don't want back charges.
So they're there.
They're there. And you're like fighting for real estate. You know, it's...
Which makes it challenging.
It makes it challenging, yeah. So then you think, and if the GC is not organized, this is what a GC that's organized, my price will be lower because I'm more efficient. I know I can make money on this job because things will go a lot smoother.
Do the GCs know this?
Well, I think that you get to know which GCs are like that.
Okay.
So if the GC is not efficient, it ends up costing more time and energy.
Yeah,
and you don't want to work for GCs like that. Not only, but you want to work for GCs that pay, but you also want to work for GCs that are efficient so that you're efficient and you can make those margins.
I like that. I want to apply that to, like, custom resi.
Yeah.
Why can't we apply that, like, put it as an actual line item for the homeowners to let them know, if you guys make this job efficient, there's going to be a discount.
Yeah.
If you make it inefficient, there's going to be a surcharge.
Yeah, you'll get to know. There's some fantastic builders that are,
yeah,
you know,
they get
really
it.
Organized. And they really see the value of, they want trades to make money, and they run a tight ship, and they run it a certain way where things get done, their job gets moving, and everybody's happy. At the end of the day, I want to go in, get the job done, move on to another project.
Of course.
Right? I don't want to be
stuck.
Your
objective is to get in, get out, move on.
Yeah. So if I'm, you know, stuck at your job because you don't have your stuff together, your super's calling us saying things are ready, and then the counters are not even there, and we just showed up to install sinks and... I found residential was challenging because they just wanted you to come. Some builders just wanted us to come and put the toilets in. The sinks weren't ready. Where commercial, it's all ready. Do it all. Call for inspection. We need to open, right? So you kind of, you kill the job better, right? And if there's an extra, it's clear. It's not on the drawing.
Yeah, well, commercial is, you don't finish it today. We don't open it tomorrow. I don't make money.
Yeah, so the extras... In housing, you know, the homeowner says, put the shower control here. And then the wife comes and says, oh, can you move it
over?
Put
it here.
What are you going to do? You're going to move it, right? But
that's why I like to actually put that surcharge or put that efficiency kind of discount on there. That's actually a good way to keep them in line. Let them know that if you guys, everybody's on the same page, we want to build a house here, you want to hire me, then this is what we're going to do.
Maybe because I did commercial my whole life, I'm a little bit hesitant to resi. I'm sure if I did resi my whole life, I wouldn't talk so bad about it.
No,
you know?
It's not so bad. Like,
I don't want to bash it.
No, there's pros and cons to both sides.
Yeah.
Like that, it totally makes sense. But I do like the fact that you can take some of the rules that you are doing well in commercial. We should be applying them to residential.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think it would help the trades and the actual process work a lot better, smoother.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, we've been doing commercial. I'm not going to say we wouldn't want to go back to the residential. Just for now, that's kind of been...
But you never know. You might start to hire certain individuals that will have a passion for resi.
Yeah.
And maybe have a different way of looking at it. That could benefit your brand. So then why not give it a try and see if it grows? And all of a sudden, maybe you grow that section a bit of it. Well, you never know.
I've lost an employee because he only likes doing resi. And then we did commercial and he says, well, I don't
like... Why did he like resi more than commercial? Did he tell you?
Well, I think his training was more resi.
Okay.
And he just liked roughing in. And he was more interested in doing piecework. So... He was talking a lot about, you know, we should open up you should open up a resi division. I can run it. It's, you know, but I kind of went another direction. I kind of wanted to go more into the commercial side.
He just wants to punch the clock.
Yeah.
He doesn't really want to grow anything.
Yeah, maybe.
If you want to just focus on rough and residential.
He was saying you should have like some companies are set up where they have a rough in crew. They just rough in, and then they have a finishing crew that come behind. And they just kind of like... I don't know.
No, I disagree, because the finishing crew needs to know what the rough-in crew did, and which means that it should be the same crew doing it, so then they know how to finish it.
I know. I don't know how.
There's a disconnect there. If you get one crew doing the rough, and then a finish crew comes along, they won't know exactly what was done.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how.
I don't like that.
There's some companies that operate like that, but I don't know. It works for them. I don't know how.
I guess it's like the Ford Model T assembly line kind of thing. They just take care of this, turn that crank, and then move on. And then someone else comes in, turn that crank, and move on.
Maybe they control the fixtures. So the roughing, they know what they're roughing in all the time. So I don't know. But I don't think so if it's custom, because usually the homeowner wants whatever they want.
So I know earlier we talked a little bit about how we're all seeing that there's going to be a dump in the economy here. How are you preparing for that?
So we're trying to get more into the service side. I've connected with a couple of other property managers.
Okay.
So just in case things go more south and we start feeling on a commercial side as well, I want to start ramping up the service side so we can kind of, you know, when times are tough, you want to survive.
Yeah.
Right? And the companies that don't survive... Then and you make it out of there, then you have less competition, right? So
yes.
You got to get through the bad times. So keeping the company with low debt is huge, right? So, you know, you have fantastic years and you start spending all your money, but then, you know, you should be conservative and prepare for rainy days, because the last 20 years, construction has been like this. I think we're going to start going into a W. You're going to have highs and it's going to get low, and highs and low. And I think that's where we're going. So you need to prepare for those low points now. I think it's been really nice the last... I'm not saying this because it's coming from my head.
No, you're not wishing it. You're seeing it.
I'm talking to people that are in their 50s and 60s. I sit down, these contractors, and, you know, I hear from them, these builders.
They smell it. They know it's coming.
They said, well, listen, the last 20 years has been like this. This is what I think. It's their opinion, but... You got to take what you hear and decide, is it worth preparing for? And, you know, always try to prepare for it.
I mean, Mark, don't you think that it's almost a good way to look at it and just always be that way? Where you're
thinking
the worst, so you're planning for it. If it doesn't happen, you're still prepared for it.
Yeah.
And you're still growing at that point.
It's like personal finances, right?
But if it does happen, you're prepared for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when a company's under pressure like that, that's the companies that last long are the ones that handle that pressure when they're slow, right? These the first 5 years is the hardest. If you make it out of the first 5 years, usually you'll just stick around pretty longer. But, how you handle the low points. Your guys are okay with rotations, maybe 4 days a week. You know, you find ways, creative ways to stay busy, and, you know. Because you'll have low points in your business.
It's going to be interesting for you guys because you're a mostly young business.
Yeah, we're young. We're only 3 years.
Yeah, you guys, but also the whole staff is young, right? So yeah. You guys are all, everybody's younger than 35, right? 35 yeah. and younger, so 19. You guys haven't experienced this. You have not experienced any kind of hard recession.
No.
You've experienced COVID, which was what it was, but you haven't really experienced a downturn in construction.
No.
Where clients are saying, we're going to hold off.
Yeah.
Where clients are saying possibly next year, like things that were promised and thinking that, okay, this is on the schedules, this is coming down the pipe, gets changed,
yeah,
gets reversed. Like, you guys haven't experienced all that. So,
no.
I mean, it's smart that you're preparing for it, thinking about we can't grow too much, we can't spend too much. We got to keep on staying the course of keeping everybody happy,
yeah.
Considering some service, you know, opportunities, see if that could happen.
Yeah.
Service is generally recession-proof.
Yeah.
Right? Because that still has to continue.
Yeah, I think we don't have any service, really. So, I mean, adding it is only going to help, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think commercial's been okay for us because, you know, we deal with pet value. Like, for example, during COVID, everybody bought dogs. That company went skyrocketed, and they started putting pet values everywhere. We're willing to travel. That's another thing, too. Like,
okay.
We did jobs on Ottawa, Windsor. I was in Timmins.
Wow.
I was in Timmins doing a pet value. These stores, you're in and out, right? So you can do it. It's not like doing a whole McDonald's where you're stuck for a bit. But
you're pricing it too, right?
Even oh, yeah, we charge for the time.
For
yeah.
the time, for the fuel and everything. And,
yeah.
And yeah, so it's like you're factoring it in.
Oh, yeah, contractors are rather... I don't know what it is up there. I don't know. Maybe they can't find people. So they're willing to pay us to go up there. And I say, hey, it's travel time, you know, gas... And, you know, if there's a callback, I have to put that in if I have to go back there.
Yeah,
you know, if you run it efficient, that's profit, right? But you got to think about callbacks or...
What are you planning on for? Like, I mean, all of a sudden with our government here, we know that April 1st, the idiot's going to be increasing the carbon tax, which is going to fluctuate your price now.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm worried about is everybody wants interest rates to go down. There's so many projects we see that they're not pulling the trigger yet. Maybe they're anticipating the interest rates to go down, but
not till the end of the year.
I don't think it's going to go down this year. I think especially the carbon tax, I think
won't do anything.
I think it's going to make it worse, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if we didn't have the carbon tax, maybe there's a chance it goes down a little bit in the summer, but not with that.
You can't increase consuming your groceries and your fuel and then, like, okay, so you decrease your mortgage rate. That's not going to incentivize anybody to buy anything because they're going to be spending so much money on these essential things that they need.
Yeah.
So they won't be buying then. So it's not going to do anything. You have to dramatically drop the mortgage rate down to where it was before pandemic.
Yeah.
Which ain't going to happen.
Well, the what's it called? Inflation has been going down.
Yeah.
What I understand. You probably know better than me. Right. But it's all, if the inflation goes up or doesn't go down enough, then they're going to keep interest rates where they are. That's my understanding. So if this carbon tax gets added, then inflation is going to go up. So then
exactly.
Either interest rates are going to go up or stay the same,
exactly.
At minimum, right?
So
I don't see
either way,
down.
you don't improve the situation.
No, it's going to make it worse. So you need to be smart with your money and try to think of other ways to make money.
I think the best bet these days is just be on the sidelines and
yeah.
just... anticipate a rainy day. Simple as that.
Exactly, yeah. And if you can get through the rainy day and, you know, if, good companies that get through recessions, imagine what they do when there's no recession, right? So all this stuff I'm telling you, honestly, Manny, it's not because I know. I listen
to
people. No,
you speak to other people.
Yeah.
You try to find out.
Yeah.
You're smart at it to the point where you should be speaking to people that have gone through it because
yeah.
we've all seen it happen, right?
Exactly.
So we all have the clues going on right now.
Yeah.
I've been seeing it for the last year. I've been seeing a lot of guys that are talking about, I'm bidding, not getting anything.
Yeah, it's hard.
Clients are just like, they're putting it on hold. We're not sure.
Yeah.
Like you as contractors, tradespeople, you're not the only ones that are reevaluating your finances personally and professionally.
Yeah.
Like homeowners are doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So as much as they really would want to do that project or maybe expand that business and open up another location, they have to look at their finances and try to figure out, okay, well, if I do it, am I going to be put in a really bad financial spot? So maybe I shouldn't do it. Maybe I should just sit this one out.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you don't get that contract. And now that it's a trickle effect at that point.
I talked to some people and they were saying it's not worth it for me to build because the numbers don't make sense. And at the end of the day, it's all numbers game.
At the cost of what things are right now.
Cost, yeah, the cost of the interest rate, the cost of the land, the cost of the labor,
yeah,
the materials, right?
Yeah.
If the numbers make sense, we'll be busy and we need to build. Like, we don't have enough houses.
Yeah.
You know, we need more homes. So I feel like I said, it's that W. I think we're going to be slow down and then they're going to pull the trigger a bit and maybe they stop or... So I think there's going to be tons of work. It's just nobody's pulling the trigger on it, right? Government has all these subsidies for them to start building houses, but nobody's building, right? So
because it doesn't benefit. These subsidies don't even... That's not a factor.
So I think the strategy... The strategy for a business owner now is to try to stay afloat.
Yeah.
But when it does kick off... You can get as much... If a guy quits today, his company, a plumbing company, he'll get a job working for himself, keeping himself busy.
Yeah.
The hard part is hiring people because that's how you grow the company, the more people you have, right? So if you have a lot of guys, you'll get all the work.
Yeah.
When the work is there.
Yeah.
So the struggle is getting the work, is getting the guys, not the work.
Yeah.
There's not enough skilled trades anymore. These guys are retiring. Every 50 tradespeople... 7 or get in or something like that, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's an insane ratio.
Yeah, so you need to
Who's leaving and how many are coming in? How few coming in?
So, like, my Instagram, I don't put anything personal on there. People don't even know how I look like.
No, it's a business.
I try to promote the type of work we do, and I hope that guys look at it and say, hey, you know what? I like that kind of work. I'm stuck in residential. I'm just doing ABS and PEX. I want to do commercial. I want to do that trench drain. I want to work on a storm. Maybe I want to try this company. That's what my Instagram's for. And I've gotten $200,000 jobs from Instagram. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because they saw your work.
Some GCs see, oh, these guys do restaurants. Let me DM them. We need more plumbers that specialize in this or that do this type of work. And it's, DM me, okay, send me a drawing. I send the price. Price is good. You got a job. Got paid. I met a lot of GCs through Instagram. And I've gotten tons of people asking for jobs.
You're hiring and also you're networking.
Yeah.
Strictly from IG.
Yeah, and my Instagram, I try to show our clean work. And, you know, I'm not, like I was saying earlier on, I don't want you to come work here and just be a workhorse and just get the job done. Take your time, do it right, and do it once. That's what I tell my guys all the time. Don't panic. Just do a good job. The quality's there. They'll like it. But try to do it once. If you do it twice, three times, then it's a problem.
It's
right?
Costing me money.
Yeah, and then guys see our work and they see the quality and they rather, okay, you know what? They're $1,000 more, but you know what? It's worth it. You know, you don't want to compete with the bottom of the barrel.
No.
You don't want to be too high either. You want to be competitive. You want to be right in the middle, right? So you want to always have your business competitive and make sure you're at that sweet spot.
How are you finding the competitive price point?
I find that the commercial side it's interesting. I notice in this time of year,
okay,
if guys are slow, they'll really cut their margins low just to get work. Sometimes you got to take on jobs just to keep your guys busy.
Yeah.
So even though you have a competitive price, you're getting compared to a low price because he just wants to keep his guys busy. And I find these guys end up getting work in the spring. They're busy in the summer, and they're not pricing the summer jobs right anymore. So the summer jobs come in, you're quoting. They're too busy because they took all the lemon jobs to keep busy. And they're missing out on the proper margins. So you got to be careful. Don't put your business... Try not to put your business at a low point where you have to take on work just to keep the guys busy. Because then now you're busy. And when there's an opportunity, you can't take it. So you always... It's a struggle. It is a struggle. This business is hard because I'll price four jobs.
Yeah.
And especially in commercial, you don't have the permits. And then all of a sudden, four jobs come in at once. You don't have enough people, so you're bottlenecked.
Of course.
It's so hard to manage the schedule. That's my biggest challenge is, you know, these supers call you, it's a go, let's go. I need two guys here. I need, you know, and it's like, I don't have enough guys.
Is it like that when it's like they just got the approval? Everything was just like just... takes forever to get the approval and then all of a sudden it happens overnight.
Yeah, so these people that are building these restaurants, for example, they're paying rent. So they want to turn that store over quick.
Of course.
Right? So if they're stuck waiting for the permit, well, that's out of their control. But as soon as that permit comes in, now they can build. They want to get that restaurant going.
Yeah.
So you got to jump. Now, if you bid on three restaurants and it works out, they're all happening at the same time, you don't know when they're going to actually start, truly. They give you an idea. May 1st, could be end of May. And then you end up being swamped.
And that's generally how it always, like, that's the majority of the jobs. That's what's happening.
Yeah. So in commercial, it's a very tight schedule.
So you can get a call. You're submitting a quote. You get a call. You're discussing things Monday. You're waiting. All of a sudden, they give you the green light on Friday, yeah, and you're done. That's it. Yeah. Like, it's a go. And then you got to mobilize for Monday.
Yeah. I can't even. Sometimes I struggle planning a day ahead of time, 2 days ahead of time.
Really?
Because I don't know.
That's
what,
short of a notice.
Yeah, it's hard because you don't know what job can start happening, and then they want to go, right? And, you know, okay, get the guy to come scan, cut the floor.
That's commercial, right? That's not the case in residential. Residential, there's a lot more, I guess, not really freedom is a good word for it, but there's a lot more room there, right?
There's more room, yeah. So some guys probably don't like that, right?
Because there's a lot more room for clients to change things, architects, designers to change things. Everybody's changing things.
Yeah.
Which just frustrates you as a trade, right?
Yeah. So you have to learn to, if that's what you're into, then you have to set up your business so you're successful in that.
But
right?
that's a good thing that you saw the commercial side and you saw the opportunities, but now you're also seeing it with servicing. You're looking at it, you're entertaining that option. And you're probably looking at other opportunities as well. See what else I can do. Where else I can take this, right? What else I can do with this?
I'll tell you one thing I noticed and why I want service. So I'll have six crews. I have three crews. Okay. So three, four, sometimes four crews. So I have them set up. I have a crew right now in Midland doing a hydronics job.
Okay.
I have another crew that's in Hamilton, another guy in Vaughan. If I get a call, let's say we have a leak on one of our jobs in Toronto, or I get the contractor saying, go to my house and fix a leak. Who's going to go? Do I pull my guy off the job to drive there to do an hour job?
Yeah.
No, I end up going. Right?
Makes sense.
I tried to save the headache. But if I had a service side to it, and I just put it on the service call.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, when you're done that job, okay, go to the service call. It frees up my time so I can focus on quoting. So I feel like I have no choice but to get into service. Maybe not 15 trucks, but at least one or two guys.
Get it started. Offer it.
Yeah. Or a couple hybrid guys.
And see how it grows.
Yeah. And then the way I am, I'm going to end up wanting to grow the service, though. Because if I hire one guy doing service, I'm going to want to keep him busy. So then I'll start looking for service calls, and then he's going to probably be too, it's too much for me. I'm going to have to hire another guy. So
and then just keep on growing.
Yeah,
from there.
You have to make a decision how much you want to grow, right? So,
how far along are you going to take this business before you start kind of handing it off to other people?
I mean,
you're growing a brand.
Yeah.
Right? So you're growing a brand, and I like seeing the younger trades growing brands and realizing that it's not just a business that's going to die with me when I get out of it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, how far are you thinking about taking this?
When I first started, the first couple of guys I hired, I said, listen, I want to grow this company, 40, 50 guys, 100 guys. I don't know. I'm 34 years old. I got another 30 years to go.
Yeah.
All right? Might as well think big. But I said, you have an opportunity to be a key guy in this company. You're my first, second, third hire, right? So you have an opportunity to be, 10 years from now, maybe a supervisor, and you're running crews.
Yep.
So I try to tell these guys, I want to grow the company. So being with me, you'll end up having an opportunity to grow yourself, right? So where do I see myself in the future? Having an estimator in the shop so I don't have to estimate. Having a project manager, having site supers, having foremen, and, operate at a higher level.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, God willing, if you keep going, right? But
don't worry, she just keeps on yelling every so often at the show.
Okay.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
I have no idea what she's saying, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we want to go, whether it takes us into condos or doing high-rise, I don't know. I mean, sometimes your customers dictate where you go.
Okay.
Because you meet a guy that's a builder, does high-rise, and all of a sudden he gives you an opportunity.
You don't know where your relationships are going, too.
Exactly,
you don't see where they're going, right?
So you have to kind of adapt, keep an open mind, try to network, create as much opportunity as you can, and you make the right decision for your business, for your family, and That's kind of how I've been since I started.
Has the landscape, like, Mark, most of the time, the landscape, has it, is it mostly a young trades game these days? Like, it's either that young trade that's starting out and building something brand new, and then there's that gap, and then there's the older trades that are basically going to be out of here in the next five, less than 10 years, right?
There's a big gap in the middle. So a lot of those, you know, guys in their 40s and 50s are foremen for those big companies.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily on their own. And there's some young guys that don't. Okay, I never wanted to be my own company because I didn't want to work for somebody.
Yeah,
and there might be some guys that just don't want to work for somebody and they just want to work for themselves, which is good. So there are some young guys that want to go on their own and grow an empire. I mean, it depends on what you want, right? I have a relative that has a plumbing business. He's got 40 guys.
Wow.
Okay, I have another relative. It's just him and his son, and they're happy. You know,
it's whatever you like. Yeah, it's exactly however you want to set up the business.
Yeah.
As long as it's making you happy and it's making you money.
Yes,
that's it.
So I have a big contrast there. One's my godfather, one's my mom's cousin. So I talked to Jerry, who's just a two-man operation. And you say, you know, I just want to. I hired some people. It didn't work out. I'd rather keep it small. That's his experiences, and that's it. And, you know, you have another guy that just wanted to grow, and he's able to manage multiple people. Whatever your skill set is will kind of dictate how far you go and stuff like that. But there is some people that just don't want to, like, have a boss. They just want to be their own person, right?
Yeah.
And then and if that's the case, so I don't know if that's – like why people would want to go on their own nowadays. The younger generation, I hear from my brother who's an accountant, he'll talk about, you know, the younger generation is harder to motivate sometimes.
The younger generation, from what I gather, is mostly driven by money, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it depends. Not everybody, but, you know, some. I used to get yelled at, you know, by my old. Like, these guys were in their 60s.
But what? Just like...
Like, as an apprentice, I used to get yelled at. They used to throw a rod. I don't yell at my guys. It doesn't work.
It doesn't motivate anybody.
The younger generation, we don't respond well. You know, I should say we, because I'm young too, but...
Yeah.
I mean, even, like, the 19-year-old kids and stuff, they don't respond to yelling anymore.
No.
So it's just not working for them. So maybe they have bad experiences and they go on their own, or... your generation, you put up more with the yelling and stuff and screaming, I'm sure.
Yeah,
right?
We put up. It's funny, is I never yelled as well, too.
Yeah.
Like, I never saw a value in yelling. I got yelled at.
Yeah, you got yelled at.
But, I mean, it was like you got yelled at and hit. Like, that's just it worked, right? It was like, that's the norm.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I never saw the purpose of it. It didn't motivate anybody to go faster or do anything differently, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, if it's not helping the situation, then there's no reason for it.
Yeah.
That simple math is how I came across it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Nah, the older you get, you stop yelling at that. But I guess the other generation, they still yell. They just, that's part of the thing. That's how they spoke.
So my thinking was, if I was going to go on my own, I didn't want to be like my one relative where it's just a small operation. I might as well stick with a big company and be a foreman and do side jobs, right?
Yeah.
You'll less stress, you'll make cash. I personally believe if you're going to go on your own, you should go big. But that's just my opinion. You know, everybody does whatever they want. But
that's what you're doing right now. It's like you're growing it that way.
Yeah, I'm trying to really build something. Like, you know, and whoever's with our company, I think there's a big opportunity for them, right? Because I'm not the type of person that's going to start hanging out in Florida and you guys coast and handle the company, and there's no growth. You're going to be... You should leave me at that point.
I laugh because there are guys that are hanging out in Florida running their business, right?
Yeah.
They're hanging out in a different place and running their business.
I mean, you could probably do that more in the service business because those guys go with their trucks and they make the money for you, and you probably can control it through an app. But
yeah.
The new construction is... I'm very involved. Like, I have
It's a different story now.
It's a different story, yeah. So, I mean... If I want to get that estimator in my office, then I'm going to have to grow the company, you know?
Grow the company, and then you can pick your Porsche, and then you can be like all the other plumbers that have succeeded. Yeah. And
I don't know if I fit in a Porsche.
Oh, shit, that's right. You wouldn't fit in a Porsche
at all,
man.
I'll probably keep a pickup truck.
No, you can't even fit in any of those exotic cars, man, at that point.
I'm not an exotic guy anyways. Like, it's pretty basic.
Mark, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, man. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're going to walk around the floor and just check out the rest of the show. You're just here for the one day?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Did any of the crew come as well?
No. My wife came.
Okay.
That's it. Me and her walked around and introduced her to some people, and then she left, and I stuck around. But no, my guys want to come. I told them if they want to come tomorrow, they can, you know, leave a little early and come, right?
Yeah.
But it's up to them. Maybe they want to make money. I don't know.
No, but it's always good to see what's going on, what's new, what's interesting, sure. and how the industry is evolving. So I appreciate you taking the time, stopping at the doll booth here.
Yeah,
and then
thank you.
CMPX is a good show, and it's good to see you again. I know the last time I saw you was briefly at the 500 event we had, which I'm sure that talking to doll more and more, we'll probably do more of those things. And
sounds good.
You guys are good at networking part of it, thing.
Yeah,
and just sharing,
huge.
So it's all good, right? So
there's enough work around.
If you want to share the deets again from Romeo, you're a mechanical and the IG handle and everything?
Yeah, so it's Romeo Mechanical, right? The Instagram at Romeo Mechanical.
Yeah.
And then, we don't have LinkedIn, but.
No, but you get the website to reach out.
Website, www.romeomechanical.com.
And then the email to get a hold of you, right?
Yeah, it would be mark@romeomechanical.com.
If you're interested in a job or if you're interested in hiring them to do some work.
We're looking for licensed guys, apprentices, you know. If you want to get out of your niche in plumbing, you want to try something more, you know, we do commercial, we do the heating, hydronics. I'm open to people training in gas. I'll help you get your gas license. I'll help you get your medical gas, your backflow.
Lots of opportunity.
Yeah. Just finding good, motivated people is a challenge. So hopefully start getting some more coming our way.
Everybody has the same problem, Mark.
I know.
Everybody has the same problem.
Yeah, I know.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it, man.
Okay, thank you.
We're out of here from CMPX, man.
Okay,
thanks so much.
Care.